welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
Hello and welcome back to the Nittany Blues Podcast, where we talk Penn State football, basketball, and all things Nittany Lion athletics. Thanks so much for joining us here. We're glad to have you as we start to get prepared for the holidays. I'm sure all of you are busy filling out your holiday shopping list. I know I am. But we've got a pretty full episode for you here this week. Right after we recorded our last episode, in true Nittany Blues fashion, another huge news bomb dropped the Penn State football program with Manny Diaz leaving for the head coaching position at Duke. We've got other news in the transfer portal. We've got some updates on the basketball side of things with Penn State mounting a huge comeback to beat an in-conference rival. So we're going to have all that and more. But, you know, first things first, Vince, how are you doing, man? Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays, man. Feeling good. It's a Wednesday. We're taking a big risk here recording on the Wednesday because the last 2 weeks we've had some pretty big news on the following Thursday, right after we released the podcast or just recorded.
Yep.
So, you know, we had that obviously with the hire of Kotelnicki, the offensive coordinator, and then Manny Diaz, which I actually called him taking the job at Duke. Mm-hmm. Once their coach took the A&M job. So I'm going to give a tip of the hat to myself on that one for calling that. But, yep. You know, Penn State's going to have some work to do to, you know, fill shoes. But thankfully, Franklin does seem to do a better job hiring defensive coordinators. Brent Pry was a great defensive coordinator. And when he left, it really seemed like doom and gloom. And then we got Manny Diaz, who, you know, maybe even surpass that. So really, you know, impressive, happy for him. He definitely deserves to be a head coach somewhere. And we were lucky to have him for 2 years, not just 1 year. So, you know, best of luck to him in the ACC. Duke had a nice year this year. So I think it's a program that, you know, I don't think he wants to bring one of those, you know, bottom of the conference, like a Vanderbilt or like a Rutgers a couple years ago. I don't think he wants to, you know, build from there. But when you have a capable ACC squad, I think that's something that'll make him happy. But I am curious to see what tomorrow's big news is going to be, because we seem to have bad luck when we record on Wednesdays.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I mean, it's funny because we're two for two now with major coordinator news, because right after we recorded about potential offensive coordinator hires, Kotelnicki got announced. And then, of course, last week we were speculating on Manny Diaz's future. And then literally the next day it's announced that he's going to Duke, or that the deal was kind of in the final step. So, yeah, hopefully.
You know what's
going to
happen? They're probably going to announce like a DC hire tomorrow. I'm calling it.
Yeah, probably.
Or before we record again, like next couple of days it's happening.
Right. No, of course. Yeah, because that's just our luck here. Yeah, we're always behind the eight ball just a little bit, but that's all right. Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you. I think it's clear that there was an appetite for him to become a head coach again after what happened with Miami. You know, it was always kind of a matter of when, not if, he was going to make the move somewhere else for a position like this. I would say I'm still a little surprised by like the move to Duke, with it not being kind of one of those traditional powerhouses in football. You know, the old saying goes, it's hard to win at a place like Duke. I mean, Mike Elko, I mean, he did a tremendous job, but he, albeit didn't have a star quarterback for the entire season, but he had, you know, like an 8-4 record, I believe it was. And he got, you know, obviously got plucked by Texas A&M. So I was under kind of just, I guess, a personal assumption that he wanted to go like be a head coach at somewhere in like the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, or in the Big 12, like where maybe there's a bit more of like that traditional football support. But after like kind of sitting on it for a few days, I kind of also thought, you know, after the turbulent end to his time in Miami, maybe in addition to a place where maybe it was not easy to win, maybe he wanted to go to a place where it wasn't the end of the world if you lose. So, you know, he has that time to kind of build the program that he wants, like go and kind of establish himself in this, in this place, like similar to the way that Mike Elko did, and not have everybody kind of jumping down his throat if things just aren't immediately all, you know, sunshine and rainbows right out of the gate, because he wasn't terrible at Miami. I mean, he didn't have like spectacular records, but they lost a couple of games every season, and they basically kicked him out of the door to try and get Mario Cristobal in there. So I wonder if that played a part in it too, but yeah, props to you. You called that. So you definitely deserve all the credit there. I think, you know, what I think is really going to be interesting is this next defensive coordinator hire for Penn or for Franklin. Cause like you said, he's had good success with his coordinators, naming all the guys that you mentioned there, going all the way back even to Bob Shoop when he came over from Vanderbilt. Bob Shoop was a tremendous DC as well. So if you had to guess, who do you think the next defensive coordinator will be?
So I think what we should do, I might have said this last pod too, is just hire Iowa's defensive coordinator. They're used to being on the field all the time. And, you know, obviously I feel like we have the better talent on our defense. So I think that would probably be a good fit. Tom Allen recently got fired, head coach at Indiana. He's been kind of looked at as another candidate. I think really most places in the Big Ten West you can look at, most of them have, you know, pretty good successful defenses. Again, not looking to go to like the Big 12 or the Pac 12. They seem to be very heavy on, you know, the offense, and even the SEC has kind of trended that way. So I feel like it is harder to find good defense coordinators now with just the evolution of offenses. So, yeah, I think a Big Ten hire would be good if you can get it. You know, you also have some familiarity with the conference, and, you know, maybe you try to go for other defensive coordinators to try to make a lateral move. It might be a long shot, like, you know, probably not going to get like Oregon's defensive coordinator, but yeah, hey, it's worth a shot. So, you know, maybe a school like that, and maybe their DC is, you know, willing to go to, you know, a big school, football school like Penn State, whereas Oregon, while it as recently it's been over the past decade or so, a really big football school. It's definitely known more as a cross country and track school, in my opinion.
Yeah. And even if you might be able to find somebody who is currently a defensive coordinator somewhere else, if you've got the money and the resources to kind of lure them away from the program, sometimes that can make all the difference, because that really has been, you know, what has plagued Penn State in the past with some of those other hires. Cause I believe Bob Shoop left Penn State to go be the defensive coordinator at Auburn, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, that has been kind of an issue with Franklin in the past. But, you know, what the narrative has been recently is that he, the president, and the athletic director are kind of all on the same page as far as the financial investment that's needed to get the program to where they want it to be. And I think that really was kind of reflected in Kotelnicki's contract, because he's got a pretty lucrative contract from Penn State, from what I'm able to gather and what I was able to see. So I'm wondering if there are similar discussions, or I guess just commitments being made for the defensive coordinator as they're continuing to do like hiring and stuff like that. What's funny is I actually had Phil Parker almost right at the top of my list, the same as you, because I'm like, you know, it's like, I don't know what it would take to get him out of Iowa, because he's been there a long time, but I mean, like, he's basically the best in the business. So it's just back the Brinks truck up into Iowa and just say, hey, you want to come coach defense for us? We got all this money. But
well, and then also he doesn't have to live in Iowa.
Yeah. So there you go. And you can attest it's nice in State College. I'm sure you could find plenty of things to do in State College, Pennsylvania, but
absolutely. Yeah, I took less money to stay here.
There you go. That's perfect endorsement right there. But yeah. I also had Tom Allen on here, formerly at Indiana, always known as like a defensive guy. Another name that I actually have on here is Blake Baker from Missouri. And the reason why I have him here is because, you know, Missouri had kind of a nice just resurgence this past season. The football team, they're going to a New Year's Six Bowl and everything like that. But what's also kind of interesting, though, is that Baker was Manny Diaz's defensive coordinator at Miami. So there could be some familiarity there, like with the system, with the scheme and things of that nature, kind of like an ease of transition sort of thing. Obviously, Franklin still has plenty of contacts and, you know, just familiarity with guys and in the SEC and down south and stuff like that. So I think that's a name to also keep in mind. What I would say, if I had to put money on it, as far as what Penn State is going to do, is going to be more along the lines of that Shoop to Pry transition where he goes internal. Because if I had to guess, next defensive coordinator is going to be either Terry Smith or Anthony Poindexter, because Franklin really likes to reward his quote unquote guys, especially like when they've been with him as long as Terry Smith has. I think he came over with him from Vanderbilt, if I'm not wrong. Smith played at Penn State. He's been with the program for a long time now, obviously the same amount as Franklin. He's done a really good job. I mean, you can't really point to the corners as being like a relative weakness of the defense over the past handful of years. So I think he's been really consistent in his coaching abilities and stuff like that. So that's where I could see them going. What would you think about that move?
I don't think it's terrible to hire from within. It just has to be a right guy, right? So if he's great at that position and he moves up to DC and isn't as good, and then you also hire someone who is not as good at his old position, then you're weakening two areas, you know, within the coaching staff. So I do think that, you know, it has to be someone who's ready for that responsibility of defensive coordinator, and they would need to have a really good candidate to fill that other spot. So, you know, I trust that'll make the right decision. He's done so in the past with, you know, defensive coordinators. I do think Manny Diaz is going to be trying to go for his guy in Missouri, you know, because Missouri's, even though it's in the SEC, you know, definitely not known as like a football powerhouse traditionally. So I do think, you know, with Duke being one of the better teams in the ACC, if they're willing to kind of shell out the money, maybe that would be a hire that he potentially wants to go that way. But obviously, Penn State can offer a lot more money than Duke, so that is an advantage that we have in money talks. So, yeah, you know, I would definitely give the advantage to Penn State if he's the candidate that they want. But Manny Diaz, I think, is going to be trying to pull hard to get him to be his DC, to utilize his principles. That way, it's one less thing he has to worry about going into a new program that, you know, traditionally is not a football powerhouse like Miami of the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. So we'll see kind of where this carousel ends up, because I, you know, it's already starting to get crazy, and it's just going to get even crazier once the playoffs are done.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you want to hop over to some transfer portal news?
Yeah, let's do it. So I guess the biggest news that we have here, as far as new Nittany Lions coming in through the transfer portal confirmed as of today, Penn State has added offensive tackle Alan Heron out of the transfer portal, and he is coming out of Division II from Shorter University. He was listed at the time as the number 6 offensive tackle in the transfer portal. So obviously a talented guy. This offensive line has always been an area that Franklin and crew have looked to add some talent from the transfer portal. So this was, I think this can turn out to be a nice get, especially with Olu Fashanu, you know, with 1 foot out the door to the NFL being a consensus first team All-American. I think he's the number 1 offensive tackle on everybody's draft board. So he's, yeah, if he says that he is even thinking about coming back to school, somebody should just lock him up in the car and drive him to the draft.
I wouldn't complain, but you know, number 1 consensus first team All-American, I don't see him staying. We would have to be like Ohio State and be like, hey man, we're going to pay you like $20 million. Cause I think that is, you know, what Marvin Harrison is rumored to be, you know,
right,
offered from Ohio State with this NIL deal. And that's about close to the same amount of money that he would make in the NFL. So not only is he able to make about the same amount of money, he's able to, you know, finish his degree, and that's one less thing he has to worry about. You know, I mean, obviously, like, he's going to be financially set no matter what, as long as he's not an idiot. But, you know, there's really no risk of him staying if the money's the same. Like, there's no consequence to that. And, you know, if we had an opportunity, or if I was a Penn State player And I hadn't beat Ohio State in my past, you know, 4 years. I had one more crack at them. That's a shot I would want to take if I was a player. So I can understand him taking that view towards the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a new wrinkle in all of this. I'd be curious to know, you know, because all this stuff is rumors and hearsay and stuff like that, what those deals potentially look like. And if those are like multi-year deals, or, you know, how that might change depending on a guy's eligibility status for the rest of his college career. So say if he's like a redshirt senior or something like that, and he gets a deal, it's, you know, not really something that maybe they'll look to add him for like 3 or 4 years. So, you know, what do those incentives look like, given the fact that Marvin Harrison Jr. just literally can't stay in college forever? You know, he's got to go pro at some point. So I'm curious as to like how those incentives then match up with, say, the guaranteed money you get as a top five NFL draft pick. You know what I mean? Like, that's really, I think, where the math needs to line up for him, you know, just as like a guy who wants to protect his financial interests with God-given talent, but also as a competitor who probably does want another shot at Michigan, like you said.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on like salaries for the NFL, but yeah, so you need to get pretty much the same amount of money within a 5-year period or 4-year period as you would in 1 year. So that's very difficult for Ohio State to do. I think it's a stretch. I think you're going to see him going to the NFL. I'd be very shocked, and I think that would really shock the sporting world. But definitely makes for an interesting story and college athletics in the future, because with these NIL packages, you know, if you look at, you know, $20 million and you give it to a freshman and spread it out over 4 years, like a Marvin Harrison Jr., he's going to probably stay all 4 years. I mean, he probably could still go. You might have to backload it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely makes an interesting topic of conversation with NIL. And, you know, when you look at the transfer portal here, it is really wild. It's like almost like Major League Baseball with free agency, and they don't have a salary cap. And that's what we're experiencing in the college football playoff. And, you know, it's like a guy in Manny Diaz's situation. They're never going to be better than 8-4. And it's not his fault. It's not a, you know, shot at him as a coach. He's a great coach. But the bottom line is, you know, college football is a talent acquisition business. And that's like at least half of the battle at that point, getting the talent in there. You know, let's say I had like Alabama's roster or Georgia's roster, I could go beat up on like Rutgers. Like, it wouldn't matter what game plan I put together. Like, the team would be fine, right? So this is me.
Power eye every play.
Yeah, I could just run the wing T every time and beat Rutgers. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's a talent acquisition business. And like, so I think this NIL makes it even more difficult for those programs who do not have the financial, you know, backage, like a Penn State or an Ohio State or a Michigan, who will just, the alumni base, donors come out of the woodwork and just throw so much money into the football program so that they can be successful. So it is kind of crazy, the arms race that they're in. And I do think it puts, you know, those programs, like the basketball schools like Duke, it puts them at a really big disadvantage.
Yeah. And I think what this whole balancing act then also needs to include is, okay, so you're going to pay, or you're going to try and rally your troops to ante up $20 million to keep Marvin Harrison Jr. Well, what about all the other stars that you have on the Ohio State squad? Like, where's the money for them? Because, you know, at some point that well, like, is going to dry up. And I'm not saying that $20 million is not, like, nowhere near the amount of money that can be acquired via Ohio State's vast network of boosters and alumni and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is, you know, from a financial standpoint, there's just not an infinite amount of money. So there's that. But then also for a program like Duke, like, let's, you know, talk about like the basketball aspect of things. Like, there are these programs out there now that are going to have similar conversations about their star young players and stuff like that. So how do you then allocate that money to your football program versus your basketball program? And how does that affect kind of the internal politics and dynamics of an athletic program when you've got like James Franklin going to like Happy Valley United and saying, hey, I need X amount of money to like do these things to get these guys. But then you have Mike Rhodes over here. He's like, well, I'm trying to like build something too. I've got a really good chance to like land this other player if we make these like kind of improvements like to our facilities and whatever that the case may be. Like, how do you play facilitator and mediator for conversations like that? Like, that's what I think we're really on the verge of kind of getting to as well. And maybe some of these programs are already having those kinds of conversations. Like, I'll bet you, I mean, Alabama, like places like Alabama in the South where money is just, you know, comes out of the ground, like it's not really an issue. But like for a place like Duke, it's like, you know, how does that dynamic work? I'm just spitballing.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, played a huge factor into why Micah Shrewsbury left. And, you know, football is always going to be first tier at Penn State, just the tradition and the program they have, people in the community and across the state and really the whole Northeast and Mid-Atlantic region. Like the fan base just pretty much takes up, I would say geographically, we would take up, you know, more fans than like any other football team, you know, in America, geographic wise. Cause I think the whole Northeast, because those New England, that they don't really have a football school up there. New York, it's like, well, you got Syracuse, but like, how many of them are, you know, diehard Syracuse fans? Maybe for basketball. But, you know, so I just think, you know, in terms of football across the, you know, Mid-Atlantic region, it's all Penn State. And, you know, the alumni base kind of spread out, like, you know, lots of Penn Staters go to Virginia and Philly, New York City, Boston area. So like Penn State's everywhere in the Northeast. So I do think that, you know, that helps from in terms of NIL. And I think that, you know, hopefully Pat Kraft finds a good dynamic splitting that between the basketball program and the football program. So again, really difficult. It's kind of one of those situations where, okay, you can put all your eggs in one basket to football, or you can have, you know, two really great programs. And if you're not funding the football or the basketball team, Mike Rhodes might even be in the similar situation to Micah Shrewsbury 5 years down the road.
Well, let's hope that's not the case. Yeah, definitely interesting times in college athletics. So let's swing back, though, to the transfer portal. We have a couple of guys who are on this list as gotten some interest from Penn State who have either visited or have confirmed visits planned coming out of the transfer portal as wide receivers. We got some names in here like Jalen Lucas out of Indiana, the dynamic return man for that squad. He was reportedly on campus here in the past week or so. You have Andre Green out of UNC. I'm not sure if he has, it looks like he was at Penn State over the weekend.
And then next week he's at Virginia.
Okay. Yep. And last name I have on here is a name that we're very familiar with, Julian Fleming. So it was reported that he was also on campus very recently, was meeting with the coaching staff, who he obviously has a ton of familiarity with. I mean, he visited Penn State, I think, more times than many other schools combined, even Ohio State, where he ultimately ended up. But so he's got a ton of familiarity with Franklin and his whole staff and, you know, what they're doing. I mean, albeit he doesn't have familiarity with Kotelnicki, nobody does at this point, but so he was visiting there. Apparently he's also somewhat interested in visiting Kentucky as another potential landing spot for himself. Not really sure if those are the only two schools he's looking at.
I've heard rumors that him and McCord are both looking at Nebraska,
which that would be very interesting
for very unusual
reasons. Yeah, because one, like, Nebraska's not very good right now. So let's just get that out of the way. Like, that's just kind of the, you know, the main factor here. So it's like, sure, but it's, but if I'm looking at like, and just because, you know, this is an audio based show. Vince just did like the money gesture.
Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Nebraska's the blue blood in football, even though they haven't been good for a long time. So yeah, money,
You know what? And because I'm like thinking about, you know, his situation. It's like he wants to go be the guy. He wants to like find a place where he can kind of catapult himself into the NFL, in my opinion, because he's a guy who's good enough to do that. And so he wants to turn himself into like, you know, into a floor of being like a second round draft pick. That's my opinion. So when I'm looking at schools, I'm like, is Nebraska the place like where you're really going to do that? I don't know. What's interesting though, just personnel wise though, there's been some rumors spreading out there that Matt Rhule is making a pretty serious push to flip five-star quarterback recruit Dylan Raiola, who is the number one quarterback recruit in the country, who is currently committed to Georgia, to come play for him at Nebraska. And that would be just, you want to talk about like landscape shaping decisions or flips and stuff like that. Like this fits the bill. I mean, this kid is the real deal. One of those like can't miss prospect sort of guys. Just basically someone who, since the beginning of his commitment to Georgia, has just basically been touted as like the next guy who's going to lead the Bulldogs, like bona fide national championship winner. Like that's how good this guy is projected to be. So if he ends up at Nebraska, what does that mean for a guy like McCord, who is looking for a home and a place where he can kind of reestablish himself in college football? And then by extension, what does that mean for Julian Fleming, who might be looking to go, like you said, like with McCord somewhere because he has that built-in chemistry and stuff like that. So a lot of what ifs in the air here with that program. But you're right, money talks, and there's a lot of money in Nebraska.
Yep.
So, but would you take Julian Fleming at Penn State?
That would be great. PA is where he belongs, Southern Columbia High School. So track guy, love the track speed. Bring him here. Get it done, Franklin.
And not only that, he would instantly become the best wide receiver on the team.
Yes, that's it. We need the help.
Like great size, great speed, great hands, and he creates separation,
which is in dire need at Penn State.
Yeah. Especially, yeah. Keyword separation. Because, yeah, we all know the woes that Penn State had in that respect. But, yeah, so that, I think, pretty much covers it as far as the transfer portal goes. Got anything else here, or do you want to chat some basketball?
Let's talk basketball, man. So,
yeah.
Bit of an up and down season so far. So, they started 4-0. Go 3-0 in the Orlando tournament, ESPN Invitational. Each game looked the worst. Like, they looked pretty good against Texas A&M, and then, you know, Butler, not as good. VCU, not great. They drop one at home to Bucknell. You know, Bucknell played lights out, shot 50% from three, and their center went to town on us. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be a long season. Then on Wednesday, they played at Maryland, played pretty well. Julian Reese killed them on the boards, and they ended up falling in overtime. But it was nice to see them play a full 40 minutes. And I know Maryland's a tough place to win. They had a very long streak. I think it was 21 games winning at home. So they don't lose at home very often. But yeah, Julian Reese was definitely the X factor in the game in terms of rebounding. And then I went to the Ohio State game on Saturday. And man, it was ugly. Like, Ohio State was shooting 50% from three. They were just getting easy dribble penetration to the middle. And then one of our guys would come over on help side defense, and then they would just pass to the open guy. So if you're a defensive player in basketball and you get beat, someone comes to help you out. But the guy who comes to help you out, there needs to be an additional rotation over to his guy. So pretty much the entire defense needs to shift at that level of basketball, because these guys are so good. These guards are just going to pass to the open guy, and it's going to be an easy layup or a catch and shoot three. So everyone really needs to rotate. And the goal is to have the one guy that's open be the guy that the guard can't see, so he doesn't know exactly where he's at on the court. Now, when you're running an offense, the guard should know where everybody is, but you want to make it difficult, or at least so that person has to turn their entire body to make a pass, and then, you know, they have to make a higher degree of difficulty shot. That did not happen. Penn State also got killed in rebounding. Free throws were not very good. which that's something that really should not change from, you know, like high school to college to NBA. That's something that should be consistent. You know, they always talk about the game, the speed of the game going up, but a free throw is the same as like college and the NBA. It's what, 15 feet and no one can block you. There's no like, you take your couple dribbles, you take a deep breath, and you go through your routine motion of shooting the free throw. So that was challenging. However, second half still didn't come out good. Like after 5 minutes, I was like, man, I took my mom to this game of like all the games to go to. And it was, I was like, man, like we have to sit through all of this like till the end. And then all of a sudden, like something happened. Like there was like a flip of a switch, like like they flipped the switch, and all of a sudden you began to see, you know, hustle on defense. They were making their defensive rotations. They were competing harder on rebounds. They were diving for loose balls. They were shooting. They shot 53% from the 3-point field goals. And in the first half, they were like maybe 20. So really amazing performance. Like just as you saw them kind of slowly chip away at Ohio State, they just kind of inched a little bit closer, and Ohio State was trying to keep like hold them off, and they just couldn't do it. And then once Ace Baldwin Jr., he was really cold, but he hit like a really tough step back three with less than a minute left. And that was really the dagger that, you know, took down Ohio State. And, you know, the guys knocked down some clutch free throws and were able to close out the game. So I think this game really does have a lot of potential to get Penn State moving in the right direction. Ohio State has some good players, and I think they're a program that's on the rise in the Big Ten. And I do think something that we do have in our favor is the Big Ten really isn't stacked in terms of being a basketball conference this year outside of Purdue. Like Purdue is obviously a juggernaut. They're going to be trying to get to the Final Four this year. And outside of that, there's really, really not much. You had Illinois, who was ranked 20th because they beat like FAU. And yeah, FAU, they made it to the Final Four, and that's great and everything. But historically, having a long decade of success, really no FAU has that level of, you know, acumen. And, you know, it's really good to see, you know, them get in the right direction. Wisconsin was ranked temporarily at a number 23. They upset Marquette, I think, who's a really good program. And, you know, they just lost, so they're probably outside of the top 25. So really not a lot of ranked teams. So I think, you know, this is a good conference for Coach Rhodes to be in. And if the guys can knock down threes, I think this is going to be a completely different team. You need to see that hustle for the loose balls, the defensive rotations. One area that they do need to get better despite winning is the rebounding. They still got killed on the boards, found a way to win. So, you know, kudos to the guys for, you know, not quitting. It can be easy to shut down if you're losing by 18 at home. But, you know, really exciting game, and definitely one of the biggest Penn State comebacks I've seen my time living at State College. So it was a blast to be here. We got to get you up for a game sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, what it was 18 points they were down, right? So, I mean, that's just a monumental comeback. Like, especially just back against the wall, you're down the entire game. Nothing's really working. You've got a tough losing streak that you're coming off of, especially, you know, losing to some teams that you probably shouldn't have. Like, those are not the conditions under which you mount a comeback against a conference rival, especially one like Ohio State, and especially one where they just poached one of your key guys in Evan Mahaffey. And I saw
he was getting a lot of booze. And it got the traitor chant going once, and that was it was really good to see Coach Rhodes kind of like, you know, back up the talk from Wingfest this summer. Like when he was asked, he was like, "Is there one team you want to beat?" And he's like, "The one team I want to beat is Ohio State." He's like, "In my family, we don't wear red." So I was like, "Okay, the players are going to be really fired up for this game coming out." Like, and then like the first half, nothing. Out of halftime, nothing. I'm like, this is like the one team Coach Rhodes wants to beat. And I'm like, the first 25 minutes of the game, and this is the performance we're getting for that one team he like really wants to beat. But, you know, thankfully the guys turned it around, and man, what a fun game.
What a Pennsylvania guy too. The one team I want to beat is Ohio State. Like that, yeah. That's Pennsylvania, baby.
Yeah. I love Coach Rhodes. He's a great guy, great family, and happy to have him here. So he's doing a good job. Awesome. I just think there needs to be some better execution by, you know, players on the court. Cause you know, offensively they're getting good looks pretty consistently, and there's pretty good ball movement. They just got to, you know, knock down these threes and, you know, the layups when they're there.
Yeah. Cool. So what do they have coming up now? Cause, you know, season doesn't stop. So I'm sure they're probably gearing up for their next game, even as we speak.
Yeah, they are. And they got a big one this weekend. They're heading to the Mecca of basketball. They're heading to Madison Square Garden on Saturday, where they'll have a noon matchup with Georgia Tech. So that'll be a fun battle. Georgia Tech actually upset Duke. So, you know, very capable team. I think that'll be another good resume builder if this is a team that really wants to kind of get their season back together and try to make a run at an NCAA tournament. This is a big game that they need on their resume, especially with the loss to Bucknell. They need some big wins to really offset that, you know, really disappointing loss, along with some of their losses in the ESPN Invitational. So I expect the guys to be fired up. And then the following Thursday, they'll be home against Lemoyne at 7 o'clock. Women's basketball, they also had a, you know, very close game with Ohio State. There's unfortunately we didn't come out on top. They lost in overtime to number 12 Ohio State. So, you know, two losses in a row between West Virginia and Ohio State for the Lady Lions. But, you know, to see them compete with a ranked team like that after being ranked gives me some optimism that they can work their way back into the college basketball ranking. So they have a couple games coming up on Sunday. They're playing St. Francis at 1 o'clock, and then they play on the 20th, they play Central Connecticut State at home. I think it's an 11:30 game. Like, it's really early. So they'll be having some out of conference opponents. So I expect them to get some wins and, you know, try to hit their stride again, heading back into Big Ten play.
Nice. Too bad that we're not in Philly, because going to the Palestra to go watch our guys would have been a blast.
Oh yeah. Palestra game, January 7th, I believe is the date they play Michigan. Oh,
I thought it was this weekend, you said.
Oh, no, Madison Square Garden.
They're going to MSG. Right.
Yeah, MSG. So they're going to be playing in some pretty big-time venues. And I think that's a good thing for Penn State basketball. You go to recruits and, like, you play in the Palestra every year. That's, like, Philly's version of, you know, Madison Square Garden, pretty much. Like, definitely some old-school, like, very prestigious, historic venue in terms of college basketball. And then you got Madison Square Garden, great venue. They were just down in Orlando for the ESPN Invitational. So we do need to keep winning so that we can go to big events like that. But, you know, I think Coach Rhodes will, you know, get us going in the right direction.
I'm just glad this year in the Palestra that they don't have to face Zach Edey and Purdue again.
Yeah, that was a fun game to watch, though. I thought they played pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, it took their sixth man scoring like 30 points, and, you know, Penn State still hung in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of basketball going on. Men's hockey had a tough weekend. They were at Wisconsin, lost both games. Wisconsin's actually the top ranked team in the Big Ten right now. So they've been dominating conference play. Then you had the women, who I think Yale was a couple spots ahead of them in the polls. I think Yale was like 12th or 13th, and we were ranked 15th, and the ladies split with them. So that was nice to see as well over the weekend.
Nice. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about Quarterback Club. You told me that you recently went to their end of season awards banquet. You got the plug. You've got the inside invitation to these things with one of our tailgating gurus. So I know you can't tell me all the secrets and details on the record here, but how was it? How'd you enjoy yourself?
Yeah, it was a great time. You know, had a blast. The food was really good. You know, I think I had like tuna and like honey fried chicken and brisket, like lots of good food, and, you know, like cake. Like it was a great event. And had some Penn State football players sitting at our table. I think Bobby Smears, he's a defensive end out of Westchester. And then Jan Mahler, who is pretty cool to have him at our table because he was one of the players getting an award for highest GPA on the team. So he's an awesome guy. He's actually from Germany and, you know, is kind of, you know, telling us about his story. And he's an engineering major and, you know, really great kid, like just shook everyone's hand, very well spoken and good sense of humor. So he's a fun guy. And it was funny because I was like, this guy's like my size. Like, I was like, am I like body dysmorphia or something here? And, but then I looked up in like the program, they're like, oh, he's 5'11 and like 179. And I'm like, oh, like, I guess I'm not that far off. I was like, dang, maybe I should have tried to like play college football, but too bad. He's probably like really fast and like has really good hands and I'm really slow and don't got this type 2 muscle fiber. So, you know, he was a blast, but one of the guys who did not look as small was JB Nelson. So when the banquet was over and when people were kind of walking out and leaving, he was like very politely like, excuse me. And then I just kind of looked over. I was like, oh gosh, like this guy's like double my size. Like I was like, yes, sir. I'm moving out of the way. So that was a good time. Spice Adams was there. Our guy Spice, man, he was a blast, man. He kind of shared his life story and it was really inspiring. And, you know, telling those stories and, you know, all the way from growing up to his experience at Penn State and kind of what makes Penn State different and from other programs. So it was a blast, just a good time, you know, good vibes. And, you know, you got to hear, you know, Franklin kind of give the message to his seniors and, you know, obviously very emotional, you know, message for any coach talking to the guys that, you know, hey, this is their last ride, right? So that was, you know, pretty cool to see some of that stuff. And yeah, it was just overall a really great time. And you also got to see kind of like a highlight video from, you know, some of the, you know, stuff over the course of the season and kind of getting everyone hyped for the Peach Bowl. And yeah, it was a blast and just a all around great time and, you know, great people to be around. So yeah, it was a blast.
Awesome. So a couple things there. I feel like there's a joke in there somewhere with a student from Germany majoring in engineering. You know, the shoe fits in that scenario. So that's number one. Number two, really cool that you got to kind of be there with some of the players. I mean, that's not an experience that many, well, most Penn State fans get to have. So that's really neat. And, you know, it's also neat too that you got to be there to kind of witness like just some of the inner workings and the stuff that happens behind closed doors, like with Franklin and the way that he addresses the fans, the supporters, the boosters, the players, their families and stuff like that. Because all what most of us see is his press conferences during the week during football season and what happens on Saturday. And, you know, interspersed in there is a couple news bites, some sound clips and stuff like that. So it's neat that you got the chance to experience this and be a part of Penn State football that not many Penn State fans can say that they have been.
Yeah. And it's really kind of cool to see him behind the scenes because you definitely, you know, see him as a human more. And you just like, you can tell, you know, from his body language and stuff, like how much and how deeply he cares about his players and the Penn State community. And, you know, that means a lot to me as a fan, you know, especially living in State College, that he cares so much about our community. So, you know, that's a really big deal for me. And yeah, so it's cool to kind of see that stuff behind the scenes that not all the fan base gets to see. So that was a pretty special experience.
Any funny stories or anything like that shared among any of the speakers, any notable like award winners or anything like that?
Oh, kind of funny thing with the awards. Like it was like pretty funny because like, you know, they have these big long list of awards and stuff. Like they like all the players who got these awards got these like big like Nittany Lion like statue things that they could carry.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool. But it was funny because like you saw like Adisa Isaac get like four or five awards. I was like, how's this kid gonna carry all this stuff like back to his like house or dorm room or wherever he's staying? Like So I did think it was kind of funny seeing, like, you know, players like that getting like three or four, like, Nittany Lion, like, plaques. It's like, where are they going to put these things, man? Like, so
it's like the meme of Adele when she won like 6 or 7 Grammys in one go, and she's literally just struggling to hold all of them in her arms, like in the picture.
Yeah, so one made it to our table. We got the highest GPA on the team. We got Jan. So that was pretty cool having one of those Nittany Lions statues at our table. And I do have to tell, like, one of the Spice Adam had a really hilarious story. I'm not going to share his whole story, you know, because, you might want to keep some of that stuff personal. But he did say that he was, like, really into basketball growing up. And he's like, all right, I'm going to be a basketball player, like, you know, try to get in the NBA. And also got into his story with, like, baseball. So he said, like, he was the same size he is now. He was like, I was that size when I was 12. And it was like that movie. What was it? Bad News Bears? The other team hires that adult and it has like the piece of paper that says I am 12.
Oh, those are the bench warmers. They pulled the guy. the South American guy. And he's just like a 30-year-old man.
Yeah, that was so funny. So like they went out there and they were like telling him, they're like, hey, what's up, coach? And he's like, no, I'm here to play baseball. Like, yeah. So I guess they didn't let him play. Cause like, you know, he was so tall and like, 290 pounds, and there was like these 120 pound kids, like, so that was like, you know, pretty wild. And so he was like, Simo, I like told you, like, I gotta stick to basketball. And then he was like, oh yeah, one day I got dropped off for football. And it was funny because, you know, the coaches were like, okay, Spice, well, you go line up a guard. And I guess what he says?
What's that?
He goes, coach, you want me a point guard or shooting guard?
Nice.
Yeah, so that was really funny. And he's like, oh yeah. And then like a year later, Penn State was looking at me and like, you know, went to the camp and they found him there and were like, okay, we gotta get this kid a scholarship. Like, he can be something special. And you know, obviously was, you know, with his career at Penn State and the NFL. And obviously, you know, as a commentator on is it the Big Ten Kickoff show?
Yep. Yeah. So I believe he's still with the Big Ten Network, but has done a lot of their pregame shows, very active during like the blue and white game. He's done a couple of broadcasts at Beaver Stadium for that. So he's everywhere. Social media presence is huge. He's got his alter ego, Cream Bigums, which is kind of a personality and alter ego in of itself. So yeah, the guy's just awesome. I actually have a picture with him when he came to Penn State. I forget for what game it was. It was for a random like a 3 o'clock game or something, but they had their set up near the Bryce Jordan Center. And I made a sign because you were able to make signs like on the way in. And all I put on the sign was, I'm just here for a pick with Spice. And I just held it up the entire time. And then after the show had wrapped up, once noon hit, all of the guys kind of like went off the set and Spice was coming around and like shaking hands and stuff. And I'm like, so are you going to indulge me here? He's like, yeah, of course. So I got a picture with him. I'll send it to you. But yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, yeah, super nice guy. He's my favorite personality on that Big Ten show. Like, he's always cracking jokes and making it fun. He's a fun guy, man. Like, he's just, you know, that positive energy. Like, he's just an awesome human being. And yeah, really cool to hear his story. And yeah, just definitely just one of those people you're lucky to be around and like hear their story and stuff. And really inspiring.
Yeah, good. Awesome. I think that's a good bookend here. You got anything else on the banquet?
Yeah, just it was awesome, great time, and hopefully I'm lucky enough to go again next year.
Well, as long as you stay in State College, I think your chances are good to decent. So I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, so you're saying there's a chance.
Exactly. So here's a little news bite or kind of flashback thing that I just came across on Facebook. So with today's date, December 13th, we are exactly 50 years removed from John Cappelletti being awarded the Heisman Trophy after leading the Nittany Lions to a perfect season in 1973. John Cappelletti is, of course, the only Heisman Trophy winner coming from the Nittany Lions. And in that 1973 season, he rushed for 1,522 yards and 17 touchdowns. And what was most memorable about his award acceptance was that he dedicated it to his younger brother, who was living with leukemia at the time. So this was a really emotional speech, one that's kind of like gone down in the history books as, you know, one of the more touching award acceptance speeches, even by modern standards. I mean, you look at the award ceremony back then, you have like the tiers of guys, you know, at their radio stations with their microphones, and you have the giant, like the big podium in the middle of all of it with all the microphones sticking out of it and stuff like that. And he's up there giving his speech. Like that's old school sports, man. So it's neat that, you know, his speech and his moment has kind of endured in the way that it has, and doing, and for, you know, all the right reasons. Something for Joey is how they have dubbed it, that being his brother's name, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, 50 years ago, lone Heisman Trophy winner, John Cappelletti. How about that?
Yeah, it's crazy. So hopefully it's a sign of another one to come very soon, because we're
yeah,
new.
Exactly. Yeah, we get one every 50 years. That's the rules.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see that Drew is listed as you know, one of the like top 10 favorites on like some of these lists as a potential Heisman winner. What do you make of that?
I mean, oftentimes it goes to the best quarterback on the best team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think he has a shot, and really watching the team this year, like it didn't feel like the talent gap between us and Ohio State and Michigan, it didn't seem like the gap was that big. Like, we didn't play our best game, and we still only lost by like two touchdowns with really just not playing very well.
That's a nice way to put it. Yeah. On the offensive side of the ball, we played like flaming garbage while playing, yep, you know, Superman football on the defensive side. And yeah, and still only managed to lose by one possession in each of those games. Miracle. Yeah.
I mean, I really count it as two possessions just because I don't count garbage time, but
Yeah.
So, but most of the game was a one possession game. And, you know, if there's no holding on that one play against Ohio State, like that could be an entirely different story.
Could be. Yep.
But one of those things, it's like the Chiefs game. It's like, oh, like, you know, Kadarius Toney was offsides and got caught, like, you know, or, you know, James Bradbury holding Juju Smith-Schuster in the Super Bowl to, you know, get the Chiefs a first down. Like, it's just, you know, let's call it as called, and it sucks, but you know, that's the kind of the heartbreak of sport. And that was why, like, as an athlete, I loved doing like cross country and track, because really you win by running faster.
Yeah, you're either faster or you're not.
Exactly. So there's really not much officiating can do, like, unless you like cut the cross country course or something and don't get caught. Like, you know, there's really not much to it.
Very good. Cool. So the last thing I got here, somewhat big rumors, if they do turn out to be true, not really sure how much water there is here, but there's been some rumblings that Florida State might be joining the conference realignment party and may look to leave the ACC for the Big Ten. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think that there's any chance that this happens? And what do you think this would kind of mean for both the Big Ten and the ACC?
Well, I think it would really make the ACC almost irrelevant. I do think that it would limit them to an undefeated conference champion going. It would most likely be a Clemson. I think that would really be their only option. But if that's the case, you might even see Clemson try to, you know, head over to the SEC, and the same could be said about Miami. Maybe they trend in that direction. So, you know, if that's the way they're being looked at, they might be almost like the Pac-12 and almost just like disintegrate, and you might have these like really big conferences. I do think that, you know, with the realignment, maybe, you know, Florida State will go, and maybe Penn State tries to drag in Notre Dame. I do think that the SEC would be a more likely candidate for Florida State to go to because, you know, they have that rivalry with Florida, and geographically it makes sense in terms of travel, you know, with the SEC because they're not flying all over the country. You know, we think, you know, going from like, you know, the Midwest to the West Coast is pretty far. Like it's, you know, pretty far from Florida too. So they'd have a lot of, and then going up north as well.
Could
so
you like, imagine going from Tallahassee to Seattle to go and play Washington? That
yeah.
is a hellish trip.
And then like going up to Happy Valley 2 weeks later or like you know, Michigan or something, like it would be pretty crazy. So I do think, I think the Big Ten is a bit of a long shot, and we have 18 teams where the Big 12 and the SEC both have 16, I believe. I think. Am I wrong? Wait, so they have 14 now. Actually, wait, no, the Big 12 might have 18 as well because they have, oh, no, no, they have 16 because Texas and Oklahoma are leaving.
Correct.
Yeah, so I was like, wait, they added four because like Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, Colorado. So those four were added. And then the ACC is up to 16 because they got Cal and Stanford, which that sucks. You're literally flying for all of your away games every single week. Like,
yep.
That's
didn't
wild.
Did they add SMU too?
They did add SMU. Oh, yeah. So they're actually up to 17. Maybe Florida State, they might need like Notre Dame to join their conference to make them relevant, really. Mm. Get another program like that in there. You know, Notre Dame plays in the ACC for most sports anyway.
Yep.
So, and I think, you know, it's tough because I feel like Notre Dame just wants to do their own thing and being independent's kind of their thing. Or like, oh, we're doing this thing that no one else is doing. And they like to put themselves kind of on that pedestal as like America's team almost, even though their schedule is like almost all ACC teams. So I don't think it's really going to be a consequence for them, because if you look at the college football playoff expanding to 12 teams now, it could play an impact, but like, you know, if you have it's pretty much a power four conference now, and you have four playoff spots, they might just take the champion from each conference and say, hey, win your conference and you get to go. And that way there's none of this debate kind of BS with Florida State not going, and they might do it that way. Maybe that's kind of would be the straw that breaks the camel's back for Notre Dame to join the ACC. You know, being like, hey, you don't win a conference championship in a power four, you don't go. But with it expanding to 12 teams, if they, you know, go 11-1, it's going to be tough to leave them out with a 12 team race, or even 10-2. They're going to be in the debate just because their school is called Notre Dame. So, you know, it'll be interesting. Now, if they go like 10-2 and get left out, maybe that makes them shift more towards like the ACC or maybe the Big Ten if they want to expand to 20 teams. But needless to say, it's going to make these next couple of years very interesting with the 12-team playoff and these new conferences with, you know, the Pac-12 just disintegrating. So it's going to be really wild in the world of sport, that's for sure. That's all I got to say.
yeah, no doubt. I mean, my personal thought is if Florida State joins the Big Ten, the Big Ten has already, in my opinion, gone past the point of being at like a manageable, wieldy number of teams and programs. Like we kind of jumped that ship a little bit, so to speak. So yep. It's like add another blue blood program. Like who cares at this point? You know, not to be so like laissez-faire about it, but it's like, you know, like really like logistically, what is the difference between having 19 teams and 18 teams in a conference where you don't have divisions? And so, you know, it's like, what does it really matter? I think that it would be crazy though to see Florida State leave the ACC after winning it as an undefeated conference champion. That would be such a like a slap in the face to the ACC. Like to like say, we mastered your conference, now we're out and we're taking our money with us. So I mean, I don't know like what future holds. I mean, none of us really do, but yeah, I mean, but the thought of them traveling to like Eugene, to Seattle, I mean, even going to the Southern California teams, I mean, that's a long ass trip.
Yeah, I think I think they're going to try hard to get in the SEC potentially, especially if you're only seeing one team from the ACC go to like the college football playoff next year. Like if you look at the top 12, you know, I'll pull it up right here just so we have accurate numbers. And, you know, obviously I need to count in fact that like, okay, the Pac-12 doesn't exist anymore. So I'll pull that up really quick. All right. So here is what we got. So right now we have two current Big Ten teams. We got Michigan and Washington. We have Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State. So five out of the 12 teams, these are Big Ten teams. All right, let's move on to the SEC. You got Bama, Texas. So they got two as well. You got Georgia, Missouri, Ole Miss, Oklahoma. They get six. So you got Florida State in the ACC, and that's it. Like, there's not even a Big 12 team here.
Wow.
How wild is that? Like, could you imagine? Like, I think this is almost going to open another can of worms, like, because you're going to see these Big 10 teams and SEC teams. This is going to be more like an NFL schedule where you play a lot more big games, like, every year.
Yep.
We play Michigan and Ohio State every year, and everyone else is kind of meh. Like, if Penn State loses anything outside of those two games, like, you know, something has gone terribly wrong in the universe, right? So there's going to be a lot more hard games. And kind of like with the ACC, like, the ACC, their story is actually interesting, too. Like, Florida, this is another good argument you can make for Florida State to be in the college football playoff, is that I think ACC teams this season were 6-4 against the SEC. And like Florida State's like, what do we got to do? Like,
yeah,
we beat the SEC team we played. Our conference beats the SEC team we played. We went undefeated to beat all those ACC teams that beat the SEC teams. Like,
not only did they beat an SEC team, they also handily beat the Heisman Trophy winner.
Very true. So it's just, man, like, you definitely feel for them because it's a team that, you know, deserves to go. And, you know, if you go down the list here, like LSU at number 13, SEC, you got Arizona at 14. That's the first team in the Big 12, Arizona. Like,
what a world.
Then you got Louisville, Notre Dame at 15 and 16. So, like, you might just see, like, hey, like, 10 of these spots are, like, guaranteed to go to the Big 10 or SEC, really. Like,
mm-hmm.
And I am curious to see how this pans out, because I think you're going to see like maybe a 9-3 Big Ten or SEC team potentially make it over like an 11-1 or like 10-2 ACC team, and things like that are going to happen a lot in strength of schedule. And they're going to do like eyeball tests and be like, all right, these 12 teams go. And I think there's going to be a lot of drama. And I think that's good for us as podcasters, creating a project, because we're going to have interesting things to talk about.
Yeah,
but man, this is the Wild West here, man. Like, it's gonna be next year. Like, if you thought this year was gonna be wild, like, I think next year you might have a whole another can of worms.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is that everything will be fair. Nobody will disagree about anything, and people, most importantly, won't be mad. That's,
yeah.
Those are the truths that we have in college football.
Yeah, there's no crazy fan bases.
No, certainly not. Yeah, you know, and I was thinking about that, actually, going back all the way to Manny Diaz. It's like, you know, when Duke is like losing games and stuff like that, like the fans aren't going to be like jumping down his throat to leave. Meanwhile, we're going 10-2 in most of these seasons with Franklin, and we're starting to have conversations of like, oh, if this happens again, maybe he's not the guy. that's how crazy, like, you know, when you start to really peel back the layers and look at the context of these different programs and their fan bases, like how different the conversations can be.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting. And you have like Liberty at number 23, who's 13 and like,
yep,
they might get a spot. So I do think there needs to be like a set case of rules that like undefeated teams get to go and like Power Four conference champions get to go. I think that should be a non-negotiable. And then everyone else is like, well, but whoever we think's the best, like, And that's tough to determine, and people are going to be upset. Like, you had the NCAA tournament get expanded from 65 teams to 68, and you know, you still have people kind of like, you know, with their, you know, torches and pitchforks, you know, complaining about their teams not getting in. So yeah, it's
someone's always going to be mad.
Someone's going to be mad. Now, I do think you need to have at least 8 teams, especially if you're not going to take all of those Power Four conference champions. I do think that conference championships mean something, and I think that shows that you're playing football at the right time, similar to March Madness. Like, March Madness, everybody has a chance in their conference tournament. Like, you think you're the best team and can go all the way, go win your conference first. So I do think that that's a more fair indicator of teams trying to vie for that college football playoff.
True. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, putting a bow on this one then, Florida State to the Big Ten, not sure if it's going to happen, but interesting rumblings nonetheless. So
yeah, I would say SEC. I think it's going to happen.
Okay, you got it here. What was the other big prediction swing that you had? Was it Clemson joining another conference?
I think Clemson, if you're seeing that, you know, only one team from the ACC is going, like, they might just stay in the ACC and be like, hey, we're going to run this shit or whatever. And yeah, like, you know, it's, they might do that, but they might be like, hey, we're going to be one of the top 5 SEC teams. Like, let's just go there and, you know, compete at the highest level. And really, tickets. I think tickets are a big thing. Like, imagine the price of the tickets at Clemson if they're playing like Alabama and Georgia and Texas, like all those teams every year. Like, ticket sales are going to be pretty high. So I think that's, you know, another factor that, you know, might be considered in terms of those two teams leaving. And then maybe you see Washington State and Oregon State kind of take their spot in the ACC and be like, all right, let's try to get in here. And like, you know, one of us will go to the college football playoff.
Yeah, good point. So we'll see how much the almighty dollar can influence things. So you got anything else here, Vince, or do you want to call this a pod?
I think really the only team we kind of left out before we kind of got excited with the, you know, Florida State news was, you know, women's volleyball. They made it to the Sweet 16. Unfortunately, it ended there. They played at Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin won the first set, second set. You know, Penn State, it looked like they were going to blow a lead. They were down, I think, 24-23, and Wisconsin had a match point. However, you did have, you know, Penn State fight back and win that second set and thought that it would be a big momentum swinger. But then after the half, you know, Wisconsin clearly had the better performance in the third and fourth set. And, you know, unfortunately, season came to the end. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, Penn State making it to the Sweet 16, really, really good performance from the women's volleyball team this year.
Yeah, amen to that. That's a big deal. So
yeah, and we got some, you know, some players returning too. So that was really exciting news. And also Zoe Wetherington, she graduated and got drafted in the 5th round to the San Diego Mojos, I think is their mascot. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I didn't know there was a professional like women's volleyball league. So
cool.
You know, she had a, you know, great career at, you know, Penn State after transferring from Utah, and really cool to see her be out there to continue doing the sport that she loves and make a little bit of money doing it.
Sweet. Yeah, that's all we can all dream of doing. So yeah, good for her. And they also got some big name recruits coming into Happy Valley as well. Do you see that they, I don't know if they offered or if she accepted to come to Penn State, but they offered, it was like Patrick Ewing's daughter.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
Got some good. I mean, after we lost Calvin Booth's daughter to Wisconsin, like, that just sucked seeing her, like, you know, getting some kills on us. And I'm like, oh, man, like, we messed up there. And then we didn't get Kerry Booth over at, you know, Penn State. Micah Shrewsbury stole him, and he looks to be a great player in his freshman year already. So it's just like, man, like, why couldn't he just stuck at Penn State? Like, Coach Rhodes is a good coach too. And really, at Notre Dame, I think they have a similar record to Penn State, honestly. Like, I don't think they're doing any better than we are. So,
But
yeah, who knows? Yeah. What could have been.
There's an awesome picture, though, of her and his dad. I don't know if they were on a recruiting visit or what the case may be, but they're like back to back, and she's holding a volleyball, and she's almost nearly as tall as he is, like head definitely like above his shoulder. So she's pretty freaking tall.
That's something you love to see in a volleyball player. Like, that's most important statistic.
Amen. So yeah, the only thing that I have here that I did forget to mention was wrestling. So Penn State officially moved to 2-0 on the official season after beating Hofstra 43-10 in Rec Hall. So number one, Penn State wrestling, just doing Penn State things.
Yeah, good way to finish out the semester. And, you know, I feel like wrestling's one of those things we don't talk about it quite as much just because, like, they're so dominant. So, like, I feel like it's one of the Patriots we're going to the Super Bowl pretty much every year. And, like, everyone's like, eh, like, New England fans were like, yeah, we're not really going to watch. And then we'll just kind of tune in at the end. So I'm definitely guilty of doing that at times. I did get to go to that All-Star Classic. That was awesome. I love that. And watch Penn State play, have a match against Clarion last year. That was awesome. So definitely hoping to get some more wrestling matches this year and, you know, cheer on the squad because we are really lucky, or I guess I'm really lucky to have, you know, the best wrestling team in the nation in my backyard. So
yeah, very good. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more once they get into like the Big Ten duels. Cause I mean, obviously the match against Iowa is going to be huge. There's a couple of matches in there. I mean, Ohio State, Michigan, there's a couple in there that really can change the trajectory of the Big Ten, which is such a wrestling heavy conference. So we'll definitely talk about it more once those matches come and go. But yeah, for now, you know, Penn State is just kind of rolling their non-conference opponents.
Yeah. And, you know, taking care of business as usual and getting some of those young guys experience too that typically aren't in the starting lineup. So that's good for them as well. And good for those guys who, you know, are training so hard. Like, you know, obviously keeping that exact weight can be, you know, very stressful throughout the course of the season too. So, you know, it's good to have some of those backup guys, you know, going in that way your starting lineup has some fresh legs.
Yep.
And also giving them experience in case there's injuries like you see with Shane Van Ness.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So, Vince, you got anything else here or do you want to call it a night?
Yeah, I think we're good to put a bow on this one. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. If you want to support the show, please rate and subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as other streaming platforms. If you want to support the show, please visit nittanyblues.com/shop, and you can find some really cool apparel there. We got the black and pink, you know, classic Nittany Blues. We got the blue and white. We got the Lawn Boys. We got the Wing Tee. We got a booty ball in celebration of Jalen Pickett and his NBA career. So a lot of cool apparel there. Make sure you check it out. And thank you guys, as always, for listening. We want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.